Today, in 2005, the Environmental Impact Assessment Review is almost set to begin on proposals to build the McKenzie Valley Pipeline natural gas project. It would be 1,700 kilometers long and stretch from the Beaufort Sea of the Arctic Ocean south to areas of Yellowknife and further south into Alberta and eventually the United States. Some 30 years after the proposal was originally made, today it is back in the news. In 1974, the Canadian federal government initiated the Berger Inquiry. It was an inquiry into the possible effects of building a natural gas pipeline on a route that would traverse the Mackenzie Valley, thousands of miles in what most people today know as the Northwest Territories. However, for the valley and for the river whose original name is the Des Chaux, this history begins tens of thousands of years ago. The land is Dene Ende, and the people themselves are the Dene people. By 1977, Justice Thomas R. Berger and the federal government had concluded hearings and discussions with nearly every community that traversed the Great River, almost exclusively populated by Dene, and had heard a near consensus. Dene Ende had always been the home of the Dene people, the valley is their lifeblood, and what would be the single greatest industrial project in the history of Canada must be stopped. One speaker at the inquiry stated, "We love our land enough that if your nation were to be so violent as to try to force upon us just such a pipeline, we would have no choice but to blow it up." Referring to themselves as the last free Indian nation, the Dene were partially vindicated by the conclusions reached in the inquiry. The pipeline would have devastating social consequences and must not proceed. The conclusions of the Berger Inquiry also earmarked the areas of northwestern Northwest Territories and the Old Crow regions of the Yukon as a national park in order to protect the calving grounds of the porcupine caribou herds, the last migrating herd animals that still travel across North America in their hundreds of thousands annually. However, the Berger Inquiry left a door open by recommending that the Mackenzie Pipeline could still go through once final land claim agreements had been signed by the 14 different First Nations governments along the route. Today, with the Canadian government still maintaining their policy of extinguishment in regards to Indigenous nations and their claims, a pipeline assessment panel called the Environmental Impact Assessment Review is being led, but this time the panel is conducted by Imperial Oil, better known to us as ESSO. Even though the land claims have not been finished with every nation, pipeline construction is being rushed to their beginning stages. All of this activity happens to coincide with Canada looking to control new shipping lanes in the areas north of Dene Ende and Nunavut, where climate change is opening up new ice routes, providing what Ottawa sees as economic opportunity. However, for both the Dene people and the Inuit of the north, global warming is not opportunity, it is simple genocide, as it threatens to destroy the land that Indigenous peoples of the North have never conquered but been a part of for tens of thousands of years. I had a chance to speak with Wesley Hardesty of the Dene Youth Alliance, who have since renamed themselves and expanded to the Arctic Indigenous Youth Alliance to accommodate their Inuit brothers and sisters. I spoke with him about the plans that Yellowknife, Ottawa, and Imperial Oil have for Dene Ende. I asked him first to tell us the history of the Dene Nation as a political entity.
The Dene Nation was a follow-up from the Berger Inquiry. It was began with the Brotherhood of Indians, or the Indian Brotherhood, sorry. And from there, it became life, and they got incorporated and stuff like that. And it was basically, after the Berger Inquiry, a bunch of the First Nations people within the area, the five main groups, the Inuvialuit, the Gwich'in, the Satu, the Des Chaux, the Klecho, actually, and the Akecho, which is the sixth one, because the Inuvialuit signed their own land claims on their own ahead of time. So it was in regards to dealing with land claims. And a lot of the elders and chiefs at the time said that we would go ahead with land claims all at once. The whole
as one
nation,
okay,
as one large group. But as things ended up progressing, Certain groups ended up walking away from the table thinking that they can get a better deal on their own.
Right.
A kind of standard divide and conquer
program. Right.
And kind of worked its way through. It started in the north with the Inuvialuit signing the first land claims.
The ISR, the Inuvialuit Settlement Region. Okay.
Yes. And then it moved on to the Gwich'in. The Gwich'in signed theirs.
Just south of there?
Pardon?
Just south in the Yukon area, right.
And they're in the Yukon. They claim areas within the Yukon that entitle their traditional area of the Peel River watershed where and part of the Anwar Refuge.
Okay, so we're talking right on the edge of the Arctic Ocean then.
Yep.
All right.
Yep, that's the Gwich'in's area. Next was the Sawtooth with the push for the Alaska road, the Alaska Highway.
Right.
They found oil at Norman Wells, and they developed the Canal Trail to pump oil to feed that monster machine to finish the pipeline in record amount of times. Also from that land claims, they wanted to pump oil as part of Imperial Pipeline.
Right.
South to Zama.
When is that they were talking about?
That was in the 1970s.
All right.
Yeah.
So Imperial has been involved for over 30 years.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah, and they were the main pushers behind the Sawtooth signing their land claims.
So the Dene people themselves, how long have the Dene people been on the land of the North?
How long?
Yes.
Archaeological records have shown for about 10,000 years to 20,000 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of connection does the people have with the land in the area?
A strong connection. It was their way of life. But there's also Dene history and tradition, like oral tradition, that we were here since time started. We never came across a Siberian ice bridge or anything like that. This is the place that we started our lives. The connection is knowing from everything on when the weather is going to change, when the snow is going to come, to knowing when the fish are running throughout the streams and which areas are the best to be in to survive.
So what was it that made the Dene Youth Alliance form? How did it come to be, and how long have you been around, and what are the reasons for forming?
The Dene Youth Alliance was the brainchild of Elaine Alexi and Jennifer Duncan. They got together and wrote an article in the Red Wire magazine kind of explaining their feelings towards the proposed Mackenzie Gas Project and the effect that it would have on the people of the Northwest Territories. From that, they were invited to the Northwest Territories Youth Council Annual General Meeting, which was held in Wati, and it was in 2003, the summer of 2003. They gave a presentation in front of two youth from each community up and down the Mackenzie Valley, including all of the communities in the Northwest Territories. And a lot of the youth and elders at that meeting were very much in support, and that's kind of where it was birthed from. Later on that year, we went to Iqaluit to give a presentation on behalf of the Dene Youth Alliance to the chiefs and counselors of the Dene Nation, where we received a resolution for support support our activities.
Well, can you tell us a bit about the activities, and in particular the proposed Mackenzie Valley Pipeline? It's been proposed since 1974 officially, so can you tell us about it?
We're actually opposed to unsustainable development within the Northwest Territories, and by that the Mackenzie Gas Project falls into that, because it has a lifespan of 20 years of what they're telling us. And if they have other plans, you know, that stuff needs to be involved within the environmental impact statement and that kind of stuff. Because a lot of the hush-hush stuff that Imperial Oil is not spreading around is that it's only the start. It's the start of developing all the oil and gas within the Northwest Territories. It'll be the main feeder line that'll feed gas directly into the proposed oil sands expansion within northern Alberta and northern Saskatchewan, which is like the one of the dirtiest places to produce energy within the world. So they're going to be burning natural gas to feed crude oil filters to make it into a usable form of petrol.
If one defines Dene as a very broad term, there's Dene peoples that expand right into Saskatchewan and Alberta too as well. Is that correct?
Yes, all the way down.
So, but the one thing I've noticed is that the North itself is incredibly disconnected from the South in ways that can go beyond profound. Can you describe some of the daily problems, daily life that are faced by Dene peoples in particular, by people?
The people here are still struggling from the effects of like residential school and trying to totally convert from a traditional way of life into like an economy that's wage-based, and where you're not allowed to go out on the land because there's something to do like for hunting or for traditional right activities. And people can't seem to grasp that. We have a high turnover rate of jobs. People will not stay at one position because of little things that come up and don't necessarily work too well with the wage-based economy where you have to be there every day from 9 to 5. We're also very disorganized amongst our own people. A lot of the youth that go out to get trained never end up coming back to the communities because there's nothing there to keep them there. A lot of the policies and projects that get handed down from the federal government are not dreamed up by people in the north and know exactly what's going on within the Northwest Territories and how things work and who to contact and stuff. It's all stuff that's been shoved down our throats from like INAC. Okay.
So can you tell me a bit about life changes going in and around the Yellowknife area then?
Okay. Yellowknife is booming.
Yes.
It has huge residential housing problems and that kind of stuff because of the influx of people that have showed up looking for jobs within the diamond mines and all the
non-Indigenous people.
Yellowknife is a separate community or city, whatever you want to call it, from the rest of the Northwest Territories. It has a feeling that if it doesn't happen in Yellowknife first, it's not going to happen anywhere else. It houses huge federal buildings, like
right.
Some of the biggest buildings within the whole downtown district are nothing but federal offices meant to deal with land claims, self-government, the Pipeline Readiness Office.
Is it actually called the Pipeline Readiness Office?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Yeah. So when you talk about like being for the North and from the North, Yellowknife has nothing to do with that.
Right.
It's more of just the hub of where you can put everyone together and they'll all agree, yes, this is good for the North, so we have to go ahead with it. And when you actually get out and talk to the people from the communities, it's not at all like that.
You know, right.
The communities are still, like I'm saying, they're trying to do their traditional activity stuff because that's what we know how to do best. And
right.
You can't tell someone from Yellowknife that, yeah, I'm going to go out and set a fishnet for provide food for my family for the next couple months. Because they'll just be like, well, why not go to the grocery store? And you'll look at them and like, why? It's free. A little bit of hard work. And